Thank you so much, Prabhuji, for on I welcome you all to this Bhakti Sangha Japa Conference Group. Thank you so much for accepting our request and coming on the call and enlightening us on this wonderful topic of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I humbly hand over the call to you now. Thank you so much for your association. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण we need to start from the 7th chapter of Madhya Lila, shloka yes, number 138, right?
131, Prabhu. 131 to 141.
131. Okay, we'll start. So, 131, shloka number 131, continues the description of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's South India Yatra. So Mahaprabhu, after a long discussion with his associates, including Nityananda, Jagadananda, Damodara, Mukunda, and other great devotees like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and others, he started going on a tour to South India. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, first he visited Kurmakshetra. Now from Orissa, if we come from that place to from Orissa towards Andhra Pradesh, so the one of the initial places that we meet is this Kurmakshetra. So first he goes to Kurmakshetra. So that is what is the content of 131 and 132 shlokas. So while on his tour, Mahaprabhu would spend night at a temple on the roadside. Whenever he accepted food from a person, he would give him some advice, same advice, as he has done with Kurma, Kurma Brahmana.
About chapter 7?
It's Antyalila.
Yes, Prabhuji, that's what even I was thinking. It's Antyalila chapter 7.
I thought it's Madhyalila. Okay. Did I read it wrong? I'm sorry.
No, Prabhu.
So, Antyalila, I'm sorry. Okay. So, what is Antyalila 7th chapter? I think Vallabha Bhatta chapter, right?
Yes, Prabhuji.
Okay. Can I also see the shlokas here?
Yeah, we are screening it, Prabhu.
Yeah, please. I'm sorry.
131 to 141, yeah.
Oh, this is a beautiful chapter. Antyalila 7th. Okay. So, our Vallabha Bhatta came to Jagannath Puri once, and he is definitely a very exalted devotee, but he had some small tinge of pride in him that he is a great devotee. And he appreciated Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also appreciated Vallabha Bhatta in various ways. But in front of Vallabha Bhatta, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started glorifying his other associates, including Ramananda Rai, Sarup Damodar Goswami, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and many other exalted devotees in Jagannath Puri, who were the associates of Lord Chaitanya. So Vallabha Bhatta felt himself quite small in the midst of so many such great devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So he called all these devotees for a feast in his house, and he also fed them a lot of prasad. And after a while, Jagannath Rathyatra started, and Vallabha Bhatta has seen Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dance so ecstatically in this Rathyatra festival, and he has also seen so many wonderful devotees of Lord Chaitanya dancing along with him. So Vallabha Bhatta was quite astonished. He was actually very happy. But the problem was that Vallabhatta had this slight tinge of pride, and Mahaprabhu has noticed that pride. So in this shloka, we see 131 shloka. Can you see the shloka? Can you see? Prabhu kahe tumi pandita mahabhagavat dui guna yahataha nahi garva parvat. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu neglected Vallabhatta in various ways, and he was also trying to present himself as a great scholar, and he was trying to argue with other devotees, including Advaitacharya, Nityananda Prabhu, and many such exalted souls. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kind of neglected him and tried to purify him. And at one point, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told this Vallabhatta that you are a pandita, you are a great scholar, Mahabhagavata, you are a great devotee also. So you have both bhakti and scholarship, devotion and scholarship, both you have. Dui guna yaha taha nahi garva parvata. The place where these two qualities exist, in that same place, a mountain of pride cannot exist. So there cannot be a mountain of false pride. So this is how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling our Vallabhatta. Next. Is there a purport to this? Just give me just one moment. I'll open my book also. That's easier. So in the 7th chapter, 132nd shloka, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, 132nd, Sridhara Swami Nindi Nija Tika Karan, Sridhara Swami Nahi Mana Eta Garva Dharam. Now this Vallabhatta, just to gather some little attention from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, he once came up with a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam that he has written. And in that, he has criticized Sridhar Swami. He says that the Sridhar Swami's commentary is not very much reliable, it's not very good, because he gives so many meanings in a contextual manner. So he doesn't present the exact things. So like that, he kind of commented on him. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, whoever does not accept Swami, I consider him a prostitute. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just commented on Vallabhatta. And because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has rejected Vallabhatta's explanations on Srimad Bhagavatam, none of the other devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to listen to Vallabhatta. So thus, when the Lord rejects somebody, the devotees, how would they accept the explanations of such a person whose explanations Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has rejected? So now in the 132nd shloka, he says that Sridhara Swami Nindi Nija Tika Kara. So you are doing your own tika, your own commentary of Bhagavatam, and you dare to criticize Sridhara Swami. And he is a very exalted commentator on Bhagavatam. So whoever accepts his commentary as authoritative is a bona fide follower of Bhagavatam. And that is your false pride. He says, Eta Garva Dhara. And you are sitting on a great mountain of false pride. So how is it justified? So he said like that. In 133rd shloka, he says, Sridhara Swami Prasade Bhagavata Jani, Jagat Guru Sridhara Swami Guru Karimani. So Sridhara Swami Prasade Bhagavata Jani. Sridhar Swami, only by Sridhar Swami's mercy, we can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. So for us to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, we need mercy of devotees. And we should also be non-envious. So if you remember in the beginning shlokas of Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam, Nirmatsaranam Satam Vedyam. Vastavam Atra Vastu Shivadam, the shloka continues. So who can understand Srimad Bhagavatam? Those are Nirmatsaranam Satam. So the Nirmatsara means having no envy in the heart. To the degree we are non-envious, to that degree we can understand Srimad Bhagavatam. And when there is envy in the heart, certainly there will be criticism of other devotees. And that envy also is connected to pride. Now, if someone has envy in the heart, he may see other people as proud. And someone has pride in the heart, he may perceive envy in others. Other people may have envy or pride, that's between them and Krishna. But when I see envy in others, I should first check whether I have any pride within me. And when I perceive pride in others, I should first check whether I have any envy within me. So now he is very proud. Our Vallabha Bhatta is quite proud. That's why he is able to criticize this Sridhar Swami also. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not like this. So Mahaprabhu does not like pride and envy in his devotees. Now His Holiness Radha Swami Maharaj once gave a talk, Katha, in Govardhan. I think it was in 2013. So Maharaj says that a person may have been a very great scholar of scriptures. Maybe he must have understood the meanings of all the shlokas in the scripture. Maybe he must have memorized so many shlokas, or he must be quoting Shastric statements left, right, center. And maybe he is a very eloquent speaker. He can mesmerize thousands of audiences. He is scholarly. But if there is any pride or envy in the heart of such a person, he has not actually understood a single word or syllable of what he is speaking or reading. So this pride and envy will actually deprive us of great mercy. Knowledge about Supreme Lord Krishna's attributes is quite good, definitely. But if that knowledge increases one's false pride, that knowledge only degrades one's consciousness. So better be humble. Although we don't have much knowledge, still if we have this ornament of humility, then we are a better situated devotee than having a lot of knowledge and having a lot of false pride because of having that knowledge like that. So here Mahaprabhu says, Sridhara Swami Prasade Bhagavata Jani. Only by the mercy of great devotees like Sridhara Swami, we can understand Bhagavatam. Jagat Guru Sridhara Swami Guru Karimani. So we should accept this Sridhara Swami as Guru. So in the 134th shloka he says, Sridhara upare garve yei kichu likhibe arthavyasta likhanasei loke namanibe. So Sridhara upare garve yei kichu likhibe, above Sridhara Swami, whatever you might write because of your false pride, Sridhara upare means trying to sideline him, trying to surpass him and considering your commentary above his commentary, right? So Sridhara upare garve yei kichu likhibe arthavyasta. Artha is meaning. Arthavyasta means it generates an opposite meaning. It becomes meaningless basically, right? Likhana sei lokana manibe. No one will care it. No one will consider it authoritative or good kind of explanation. Now we need to understand. Prabhupada writes a long purport here. There is one big paragraph here. Prabhupada writes in the second statement that the parampara system does not allow one to deviate from the commentaries of previous acharyas. By depending upon the previous acharyas, one can write beautiful commentaries. How one can write beautiful commentaries? By depending on previous acharyas. And Prabhupada himself is a great example for this. So Prabhupada, how did he write this Chaitanya Charitamrita? So Prabhupada has taken the Amrita Pravaha Bhashya written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he has also seen this Anubhashya written by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Chaitanya Charitamrita was written by Prabhupada in a very short time also. And he did not even complete Srimad Bhagavatam. Before completing Bhagavatam, he began Chaitanya Charitamrita and he completed in a very short time. And if you see, at least 80-90% of Prabhupada's commentaries on Chaitanya Charitamrita are exclusively based on Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentaries. And he adds little bit of his inputs from modern perspectives and all. And we have some Bengali devotees who have actually seen the Bengali commentaries of Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So while writing Chaitanya Subodhini, I requested some devotee to just go through those commentaries so that we can add some more points in Chaitanya Subodhini, just like I did for Bhagavat Subodhini. So Bhagavat Subodhini has some points from Prabhupada and also a little bit of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So now that devotee, Bengali devotees who went through that commentaries, so they realized that most of the contents of the commentaries Prabhupada has already given in his commentaries. So Prabhupada simply says here that by depending on the previous acharyas, one can write beautiful commentaries, not concocting. And Prabhupada also writes a very brilliant purport to the first shloka of the fourth chapter of the first canto of Bhagavad, 1.4.1. You can see, Prabhupada writes about personal realization. Personal realization means not trying to surpass the previous acharyas. So one should explain the scriptural statements referring to the explanations of acharyas, and one should not try to surpass the previous acharyas in the name of realizing the content. Yes, this is the purport. We can just scroll a little bit, go a little down. So now, for example, the context here is our Suta Goswami was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to Saunakadi Rishis. So what was the qualification of Suta Goswami? Now he says, his Prabhupada writes, Suta Goswami repeats Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he has heard it from Sukadeva Goswami. So Sukadeva Goswami was speaking Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj, and Suta Goswami was also there in the audience and he was also listening. And whatever he listened from Sukadeva Goswami, he presented it to our Sonakadi Rishis. Now he says, Prabhupada says, where is that shloka, personal realization? Go little, here, fourth line, fifth line. Personal realization does not mean that one should out of vanity. Where is it? Personal realization does not mean that one should out of vanity attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the subject matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. That is personal realization. For example, we are speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to a very newcomer. Our presentation has to be really very lucid. And you are speaking Bhagavatam to someone who does not know Sanskrit at all. Then you may speak only in English or the local language that the person understands. Or you are speaking Bhagavatam to a small child, a 5-10-year-old boy or girl. Then you need to present Bhagavatam in a nice story form to make it very interesting and understandable and approachable to the children. So, and you may be speaking Bhagavatam or any scripture, Bhagavad Gita, to someone who is very new or naive, or someone who is little, who have some philosophical bent. You need to present the subject in a technical manner. Someone who can appreciate only stories and lessons, you may speak those relevant pastimes. So the philosophy has to be, philosophy or pastimes, or the whole scriptures have to be explained by an experienced speaker so that the audience can appreciate and understand them. Not to exhibit one's own scholarship, or definitely not to surpass the previous acharyas. Okay. Sometimes the speaker may give certain examples or anecdotes that may not be present in the previous acharya's commentaries sometimes. But that does not mean that he is not presenting according to the previous acharyas. So the essential principle has to be preserved But it has to be presented in such a way that devotees can understand it very easily. So we need to preserve the essence there. So to communicate that essential principle or the lesson that is there in the book, you may sometimes quote certain examples. For example, Krishna was describing the science of soul to Arjuna. Who was Arjuna? He was a warrior. So, warrior means he always deals with bows and arrows and swords and other weapons. Arjuna has so many shastras and astras. So what did Krishna say? Achedyoyam, adahyoyam, akledyo sosya evacha. Arjuna might have a wind weapon, so soul cannot be cut by it. Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavakaha. Nainam chindanti shastrani means you cannot cut the soul with your shastras. Nainam dahati pavakaha. Pavaka is fire. Oh Arjuna, you might have a fire weapon, but your fire weapon cannot kill the soul. You may have a wind weapon. The wind weapon cannot wither the soul. You may have a water weapon. The water weapon cannot moisten the soul. Basically, Krishna is speaking the science of soul. To whom? To Arjuna. But he's speaking the whole science of soul in terms of weapons. The language is weapons language here. It's not something else. So now we are presenting the same science of soul to, say, some children. So you present in a different manner. Okay, and Krishna also gives certain examples, just like Vasamsi Jiranani Yatha Vihaya, just like your cloth becomes old, you discard that cloth, take a new cloth. Right? So, in this way, we need to use certain examples or anecdotes which may not be present directly in the scriptures, but for the understanding of a common person, we can present certain examples. But the essential message has to be communicated. And although you are presenting new examples or anecdotes and presenting the whole philosophy in a little more interesting manner so that people can digest it easily, you should not think that Acharya's commentaries are not relevant or they are not well written. Okay, if they are well written, why I should create my own content? So one should not feel like that. So the essential understanding is coming from there. In your presentation, you may have to present in a certain way. But for that, you need to first understand and assimilate and absorb and realize what they are speaking to us. That's what Sukadeva Goswami also said. Yahasvanu bhava makhila shruti saramekam adhyatma deepamatititi rishatanta mondham samsarinam karunayaha purana guhyam tam vyasa sunumupayami gurum munina. Svanubhavam means this Sukadeva Goswami has personally realized, assimilated, absorbed and understood the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he started speaking in such a way that even his guru Vyasadev and his Paramaguru Narada Muni both were sitting in the audience and hearing Sukadeva Goswami's class as if they are hearing for the first time. So to that degree, he realized and assimilated. Now, in the Bhagavatam, there is a beautiful shloka. Kasmayena vibhasito yamatulo jnana pradipah pura tadrupena chanaradaya munaye krishnaya tadrupena yogindraya tadatmanatha bhagavadrataya karunyata tat shuddham vibalam vishokam amrutam satyam param dhimahi. Means right in the beginning of the creation, the Supreme Lord has spoken Srimad Bhagavatam to Brahma. And Brahma spoke that Bhagavatam to Narada Muni. Narada Muni spoke Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva spoke Bhagavatam to Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami spoke Bhagavatam to our Parikshit Maharaj or Suta Goswami. And Suta Goswami spoke Bhagavatam to Naimisharanya sages. So like that same Bhagavatam message is coming through this transparent vayamani of Parampara. But how did it come? The Supreme Lord spoke Bhagavatam to our Brahma in just four shlokas. That is called Chatushloki Bhagavatam. Only four shlokas were spoken by the Supreme Lord to Brahma. And when Brahma spoke that Bhagavatam to Narada Muni, more shlokas, I don't know exact count, but it's little more elaboration. And Narada Muni spoke Bhagavatam to Vyasadeva in a certain way. And Vyasadeva has actually contemplated and understood based on the teachings of Narada Muni, and he has penned down this 18,000 shlokas. And Sukadeva Goswami spoke in a certain way, Sukadeva Goswami spoke in a certain way. This is all Bhagavatam only, but the exact wordings used by different speakers may be a little different. But the essential understanding that and the conclusion that they are presenting is same. That is how we need to preserve the essence. Although we may not be able to exactly repeat certain things verbatim, in our explanation we may add certain things, but we should preserve the essential understanding there. So that is personal realization. So Prabhupada writes here in this purport that the false pride that makes one think that he can write better than the previous acharyas will make one's comments faulty. The very thought that I can do better than my previous acharya makes the commentaries faulty, makes the commentator an offender. He's not a commentator anymore, he's an offender only. Who can surpass previous acharyas? For example, Prabhupada has written such beautiful, elaborate commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita only, you are already in Anchalila. If you go a little ahead and see the last few words that Prabhupada writes, he says that I neither have bhakti, means I am not a great devotee. Second point, he says, I am not a great scholar. I am not a scholar, I don't have devotion. So, when he says that, he's saying that although I'm not a scholar, although I'm not a devotee, I'm able to write this commentary. I could complete this commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. All this happened by the grace of my spiritual master, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who has instructed me to present these scriptures in English language. So he gave all credit to his spiritual master. Prabhupada says that if there is any credit in my translation work, all that credit goes to my Guru Maharaj. And also the credit goes to all my American disciples who have helped me in this whole endeavor. So in this way, Prabhupada has given all credit to other Vaishnavas and his own Guru and the Supreme Lord. So when an acharya or a devotee or a Vaishnava writes a book, writes a spiritual literature, it must be in line with the previous acharyas. Anything that we write to surpass the previous acharyas will make our writings very faulty. And actually, writing is a very great responsibility. It's not an ordinary activity, because books will remain for a long time, for decades and centuries to come, depending on how authentic the book is written. So newspaper may be discarded in a day. A magazine may be discarded in a week or two. A monthly magazine can be discarded within a month. Or in the month also, first couple of days, people will refer to it and then they will discard. But any spiritual piece of writing can exist for a very long time, for centuries to come also. But the potency of that literature actually depends on how much the content of the literature is in alignment with the teachings of the previous acharyas and ultimately the teachings of the Supreme Lord. So anything that is very concocted may sometimes impress the material minds of common people, but they cannot impress the spiritual minds of devotees. Tadva visargo janatagha viplavo yasmin pratislokam abadhavatyapi namani anantase shunkitani yat sarvanti gayanti gridanti sadhavaha. So even if there are some grammatical errors or some very literary ornaments may not be there, still the literature that glorifies Krishna in line with the teachings of acharyas is a literature which is worth studying. So Prabhupada says, at that time, at the present moment, it has become fashionable for everyone to write in his own way. But such writing is never accepted by serious devotees. So it could be seen as place of pilgrimage for crows. Where do crows go? They go on the garbage. But hamsas, nayatra hamsaha niramantyu sikshaya. Hamsas means exalted devotees. They don't take pleasure in such cheap literatures that are just products of people's material minds. So Prabhupada is, because of false pride, every scholar and philosopher wants to exhibit his learning by interpreting shastras. If you want to exhibit your learning, do it in your own way. Don't interpret Gita and Bhagavatam. Because Gita is popular, and if I write a book on Gita, I will also become popular. But what will you present? What is not there in Gita and your own concocted ideas? So that kind of literature is never appreciated. So and the system of commenting in one's own way is fully condemned by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why he says, Arthavyasta. It's Arthavyasta. Commentaries written according to one's own philosophical way are never accepted. No one will appreciate such commentaries. Not only this, we have the example of Krishnadasa Kaviraj Goswami himself, who is the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So what does he say? Chaitanya Charitamrita author, he says that I am able to write this commentary only by the mercy of so many Vaishnavas and Nityananda Prabhu and all my Siksha Gurus. They have empowered me to write. Personally, I am not very learned. I am very old also. And when I am writing, my hand is just shaking. Right? My memory is very poor. I am very old. Somewhere in 90s is there. But still, I am writing. That means I am writing only because of God's mercy. So, ordinarily speaking, materially speaking, a person in my situation won't be able to write anything. But I am able to write because of the mercy of the Lord. So, this is the mode of a spiritual author. So, a spiritual author never considers his works as his own works. So he always considers this work is actually done by Krishna through my hands. Okay, Prabhupada once said that somebody asked Prabhupada, how do you write so much? How do you write in this way? Like, what is your technique and all that? Something like that somebody asked. And Prabhupada said that actually Krishna dictates me and I write. And they were a little surprised. And one of the associates of Prabhupada, they said, he started giving an explanation. He says that actually, because Prabhupada is a very great devotee, because of his devotion, he gets some inspiration or intuition from Krishna to write in this way. That's how he writes. That's what he meant by saying that Krishna is personally dictating. Prabhupada looked at him and said, am I writing or you are writing? I am saying Krishna is personally dictating me and I am writing. Yes, Prabhupada, personally dictating. So like that, there is authenticity. Because a devotee is too much, very much in love with Krishna, Krishna will personally make the devotee write. So we may not be able to understand, an average struggling sadhaka may not be able to understand what happens between a great acharya and the Supreme Lord. So writing is not just an exhibition of one's own literary abilities or vocabulary, grammar, poetry abilities, not just that. So spiritual writing depends on how much devotion one has towards Krishna and how much alignment one has towards the teachings of previous acharyas. So these are very important factors in spiritual authorship. So Kaviraj Goswami says that every now and then he says that the original author or Vyasadev of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's autobiography is Vrindavan Das Thakur. So just like Vyasadev has written Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a book about Krishna, similarly, Vrindavan Das Thakur has written Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a book about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not different from Krishna. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is a very authentic description of, Chaitanya Bhagavat is an authentic description of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes given by Vrindavan Das Thakur, and he is the original Vyasadeva. So whatever remnants he has left, I am writing. And what? How did he write? Our Kaviraj Goswami, he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita in such a way that he has planned Adilila, or the initial pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which he performed before sannyasa. Means the first 24 years of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, he completed in just 5 chapters. He summarized in 5 chapters. Why? Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's initial pastimes are very elaborately described by Vrindavan Das Thakur in Chaitanya Bhagavat. So what is the need for me to elaborate them again? It's not necessary. So that's why he says, I'm just summarizing in 5 chapters. And initial 12 chapters, he gave a prelude. He established the Chaitanya Tattva, Nityananda Tattva, and all those Tattvas. And he also described Chaitanya Tree. So that's how Adilila has 17 chapters. First 12 chapters are dedicated for this kind of introduction and philosophical basis of our whole Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And last 5 chapters, he summarized entire Adilila. And the major pastimes like Mahaprakash Leela, Jagai Madhai, Sridhar Kulavicha's interactions, and all these are not described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. They're all there in this Chaitanya Bhagavat. And later pastimes means the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya after sannyas, they are called Sesha Leela. And Sesha Leela is divided into 2 parts. One is Madhya Leela, second is Antya Leela. So Madhya Leela constitutes the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he performed in the first 6 years of his sannyas. And in the last 18 years of his life, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, they are described in the Antya Leela. So Madhya Leela describes 6 years of his pastimes, and Antya Leela 18 years. Now, first 24 years he summarized in 5 chapters. The middle 6 years pastimes, he elaborated in 25 chapters. Because Vrindavan Das Thakur has not elaborated them. 25 chapters to describe pastimes that happened in 6 years. And later years in 20 chapters of Antya Leela. So thus you see the way Chaitanya Charitamrita is written also is acknowledging the previous author's contribution repeatedly without trying to surpass him. Okay. Which material author would recommend his readers to refer someone else's book who has written on the same subject matter? Okay, in this subject matter, my book is perfect. Okay, you don't refer any other book. That's what people may claim. But a spiritual author is one who says that someone else has already written. I also feel an impetus to write just to glorify Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why I'm writing. But you should read those commentaries. Prabhupada wrote in the very first commentary itself, first initial pages of Srimad Bhagavatam commentary, he says that a serious student should do well in writing, reading the commentaries of Sridhara Swami, even Vallabhacharya also, like that some Jiva Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, like that he gives the names of a couple of acharyas, 5-6 acharyas, and says, so many devotees have written commentaries on Bhagavatam, and he also wrote. So you should read all of them also. You are reading my commentary, but I am referring you to some other commentary also, which is bona fide commentary of previous acharya. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, when he wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, Sarartha Darshini, he writes in his introduction, right? In the very first verse he says, I have read Sridhar Swami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. I have also read Jiva Goswami's commentary and his Sandarbhas. And I also read Sanatana Goswami's Vaishnava Toshini. So like that, I read the commentaries on Bhagavatam by previous acharyas. And I also developed a great desire to glorify Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why I am writing this Sarartha Darshini commentary. But if I am doing it out of my own arrogance, then my commentary will only produce mockery. But if I am doing it on behalf of the acharyas and with devotion, every, and if it is, if I am doing it out of the causeless mercy of Krishna and Acharyas, then every word of my commentary will give bliss to my readers. Means, if his commentary is giving bliss to the readers, the credit goes to Krishna's causeless mercy and the previous Acharyas. But if the commentary is not well received by the devotees, or if they find it faulty, then that responsibility is mine. He is accepting blame and transferring credit. But the nature of a materialistic person is shift blame and accept credit, like that. But a bona fide spiritual author is one who gives more importance to previous Acharya's commentaries, and as their representative, as their servant, he repeats them in a language or in a style which is understandable by other devotees. So that's very brilliant purport that Prabhupada has written. 135th shloka. Sridhara anugatai kare likhana sabaloka manyakari kari vigrahana. One who comments on Srimad Bhagavatam following the footsteps of Sridhar Swami will be honored and accepted by everyone. In our Vaishnava circles, any commentary or any piece of writing, whether it is an article or a small book or a compilation or a poetry, anything, only if it is in the line of previous Acharyas, that commentary is appreciated by Vaishnavas. But if it is not in line with previous Acharyas, that commentary cannot be read. Oh, this has some Mayavad in it. Keep it aside. We can't read it. Oh, this has some lot of discussion on some material topics. It's okay. Let's focus on something which is very spiritual and which is very much in line with the Acharyas. So when you quote an Acharya, when you repeat the words of an Acharya, then your words or your writings become authentic. When even within the mind, somewhere in the corner also, if there is a thought that to surpass the previous Acharyas, then it's a great offense, and that commentary is not a commentary, it's a great failure. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finally suggests Vallabhatta in the 136th verse. Sridharanugata kara bhagavata vyakhyan abhimana chadi bhaja Krishna Bhagavan. Two instructions he has given in the shloka. Number one, Sridhara Anugata Kara Bhagavata Vyakhyana. Bhagavata is the book Bhagavatam. Vyakhyana means explaining. Explaining Srimad Bhagavatam. Sridhara Anugata means following the footsteps of Sridhara Swami. So you please explain Srimad Bhagavatam, quoting Sridhara Swami, following the footsteps of Sridhara Swami. You don't keep it aside and then concoct your own things. Right? Abhimana chadi, give up your false ego, give up all your false conceptions and false pride, and do what? Bhaja Krishna Bhagavan. Worship that Supreme Lord Krishna. So we need to have, we should not have false pride. Actually, three things he said in this shloka. We should not have false pride, and we should be obedient to previous acharyas. We should have devotion to Krishna. Then our works will be faultless. 137th shloka. Aparadha chadikara Krishna sankirtan achirata pavitabe Krishna racharan. Aparadha chadi, please give up this offensive attitude. Kare Krishna sankirtan, and give up offenses and chant the holy names of Krishna. Achirata pavitabe Krishna charan. You can easily and quickly attain the shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. So, offenseless chanting and worship of Krishna, and not offending or not trying to surpass a previous Acharya and giving up false pride. These are the things that he said. So, actually, Kaviraj Goswami compares Vallabhatta's case with Indra's case. Indra was also sitting on a mountain of false pride. But Krishna lifted Govardhan and totally destroyed the pride of Indra. So, here we see that because Indra was puffed up of his material opulence, Lord Krishna stopped Indra Puja permanently, not only that one year. Indra Puja was stopped and Govardhan Puja was introduced. Okay, fine. Indra was proud. Next year, again Indra Puja was stopped, Govardhan Puja is continuing. Forever Indra Puja is stopped. Forever Govardhan Puja is introduced. Why? Because in that 1 year, our Indra was quite proud. So, but one thing is, Krishna destroyed the pride of Indra. Krishna did not destroy Indra himself. So we need to understand that a devotee, when he becomes proud or envious or lusty or greedy or whatever it may be, the Supreme Lord is always kind towards those devotees. That does not mean he increases their faults, but he has the ability to forgive them and give them another opportunity to rectify themselves. He doesn't reject them. He tries to reform them. What's wrong with this guy, with this devotee, is the false pride or envy or lust or whatever shortcoming or anartha that he has. Once that is removed, the soul is pure. Potentially, he is a great devotee. Thus, Krishna recognizes that. So, he neglected Vallabh Bhatta. He chastised Vallabh Bhatta. He gave very heavy feedbacks to Vallabh Bhatta. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did everything that is needed to bring Vallabh Bhatta back to his senses. But, see, this entire chapter, you can see how Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving so much of importance to rectify that proud mentality of Vallabh Bhatta. But Mahaprabhu never exhibited any kind of neglect towards Vallabh Bhatta at heart. He neglected Vallabh Bhatta definitely just to bring a transformation in him. But it's not a heartfelt neglect. It is a necessary neglect. It was needed for Vallabh Bhatta to come back to the senses. Otherwise, Vallabh Bhatta would be continuing with his pride. So somewhere his pride has to be crushed. So Lord did the needful. So after a while he realized that, oh, just like Krishna purified Indra, similarly Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is purifying me. So now Vallabh Bhatta was falsely proud. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu neglected him and then brought a transformation in him. And ultimately he did not disown this Vallabh Bhatta, although he disapproved his mistakes and his mentality. So now, you see, in the Saukanya Yatra only, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went along with whom? Kala Krishna Das. So Kala Krishna Das was accompanying Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu throughout this Saukanya Yatra. And somewhere they reached Saukanya, somewhere close to Tamil Nadu, Kerala, that area. There at one place, this Kala Krishna Das was attracted to some gypsy woman. And he was attracted by this Bhattatharis, and he left Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association and went to their camp. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to this Bhattatharis and then pulled this Kala Krishna Das by his sikha, and these Bhattatharis were trying to attack Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and somehow with all their weapons they themselves were destroyed, their body limbs were destroyed, and Mahaprabhu protected this Kala Krishna Das. And later, although this Kala Krishna Das has done such a grave mistake, even while in the association of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is leaving Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and then trying to associate with somebody who is not worth associating with, right? But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is kind enough to go and reclaim his servant, go and save his servant. His servant is meant to serve him, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is serving this servant. He brought him and he did a mistake. That is very clear. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not reject him there. He allowed this Kala Krishna Das to accompany him throughout the yatra. It happened somewhere in the middle of the yatra. And South India yatra lasted for 2 full years. And somewhere, maybe after a year or so, it must have happened. They reached Kerala and Tamil Nadu, that area. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited so many other places. He went to, Pandharipur and then Maharashtra, some places. See, he went through all the places. And in return, he again came to Ramananda Rai, and then he was again discussing with Ramananda Rai. So throughout this rest of the yatra, second half of the yatra, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu allowed Kalakrishna Das to serve him. And after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back to this place, Jagannath Puri, in front of Nityananda, Jagadananda, Damodara, Mukunda, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, see, this Bhatta, who is this Kalakrishna Das, is very, he has done a grave mistake. So I reject him. I have nothing to do with him. I am not responsible for him. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected Kalakrishna Das. So where did he reject? He did not reject him in South India. He brought him all the way till Jagannath Puri, and then he rejected him here. So that his devotees Nityananda, Jagadananda, Damodara, Mukunda can show some mercy and give some service to this Kalakrishna Das and bring him back to some good position. Yes, mistakes happen. Sometimes devotees also may do some mistakes, but the Lord never gives up his kindness. So apparently, to set the highest standard for a sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not approve the mistake done by this Kalakrishna Das to set the right standard. But through his devotees, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed some mercy on this Kalakrishna Das also. And the devotees have sent Kalakrishna Das to Shantipur so that he can give the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival back at Jagannath Puri. Sachimata became happy, Advaitacharya became happy, Srivastakar became happy, and many other exalted devotees in Shantipur, Navadvip areas become so happy, and they also received Jagannath Mahaprasad. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed some mercy on Kalakrishna Das through his devotees, and other devotees in Shantipur and Navadvip, they gave profuse amount of blessings to this Kalakrishna Das. See, the person who has become distracted from Krishna's service, Lord Chaitanya's service, has become the recipient of profuse blessings of Lord Chaitanya's devotees, both in Jagannath Puri and in Shantipur, Navadvip areas. So thus, although the Lord disapproves the mistakes of his devotees to set the right standards, highest standards, he doesn't disown them. Directly or indirectly, he shows mercy upon them. That does not mean we take an advantage of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. But we should understand that although the father cares for even a mischievous child, even if the child has a lot of mischief also, father is quite kind towards the child. The child should not take undue advantage of father's kindness. If the child is mischievous, still the father is loving and kind towards him, how much more the father will be kind and loving and happy when the child is more disciplined and well-behaved. So a responsible son should try to see smile on father's face. A responsible devotee should try to please Krishna with one's overall demeanor and behavior and service and mood and attitude. So that's the responsibility of a devotee, rather than, okay, I'll do mistakes and he will forgive me. That's not the mode of a devotee. Here you see, Vallabhatta was affected by pride. Kalakrishna Das was distracted with lust. But still, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ultimately accommodated them and tried to bring a transformation in them. When reformation is possible, rejection should not be an option. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not reject people, he accepted them. But he showed the necessary strictness to disapprove their mistakes. A mistake, if it is encouraged, it will become a trend. So one should not encourage mistakes of other people, but one should also not give up one's kindness. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very kindly brought Vallabhatta to his senses, to back to his normal situation. So we did how many verses? 138. 138th verse, he says, Bhatta kahe yadi more haila prasanna ekadina puna mora mana nimantrana. In the 139 shloka, he says, Prabhu avatirna haila jagat tarite manilera nimantrana tari sukhadite. So in these two shlokas, he says that, oh Lord Chaitanya, I am very happy that you have forgiven me and you have again accepted me. But if you have really forgiven me, can you please come to my house and eat some food? I am going to give you some food. Please accept my invitation, he says. So then Mahaprabhu says such a beautiful verse, 140th shloka. So Mahaprabhu says, Mahaprabhu's good quality of mercy is shown here. Jagatera hita hauka yei prabhuraman dandakari kare tara hridaya shodhan. Jagatera hita hauka yei prabhuraman. So prabhuraman means the Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mind is always filled with a intention to cause welfare to the whole jagat. Jagatera hita hauka yei prabhuraman. So our welfare is his intention. Dandakari kare tara hridaya shodhan. So hridaya shodhan means purifying the heart. Dandakari, if it is required for Lord Chaitanya to punish a devotee to purify his heart, he does it. Okay. So to purify the heart, he will punish people. But his intention is not just to cause pain to the devotee, but to purify the devotee. His intention is not to reject the devotee, but to reform the devotee. His intention is not to just take revenge on a devotee, but actually reinstate the devotee in the right consciousness. So finally, Svaguna Sahita, Svagana Sahita Prabhura Nimantrana Kaila, Mahaprabhu tare tabe prasanna haila. So Vallabhatta invited Lord Chaitanya and his associates, and Mahaprabhu was very pleased with him. So it began with the chapter began with some sweet loving exchanges between Mahaprabhu and Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Vallabhatta. And in the middle there is some tension because of Vallabhatta's proud attitude. But at the end again Mahaprabhu just reformed him and accepted him. Apparently, he rejected him for a while. He rejected his commentaries. Basically, Mahaprabhu did not approve the proud attitude of this Vallabhatta. But he has nothing against Vallabhatta personally. Nothing personal there. Huh? Personally, everybody is a child of the Supreme Lord and the Lord loves everybody. Now, although Krishna orchestrated the entire Kurukshetra war to defeat Duryodhan, but at the end of the war, when Duryodhana was lying in a pool of blood, Lord Krishna was not happy to see that scene. He was very concerned. Oh my God, I gave him so many options. I gave him a lot of teachings, but this Duryodhana was so wicked and so greedy for the kingdom that he did not listen to any good advice, and now he's lying in a pool of blood like this. But Krishna was not satisfied. He was not happy to see him like that. So Krishna is not happy to see pride or envy or greed or any other such anarthas in the devotee's heart. What does he do? He tries to purify the hearts of those devotees who have some contamination in their hearts. But he does it in a way that we may not find it very palatable. But if we expose ourselves to the operation done by Krishna, just like if we need to get operated, we have to just lie down, full surrender in front of the surgeon. Surgeon will cut our body, stitch our body, and then he will put some scissors and knives within the body, and then he does anything. Complete surrender. So unless we expose ourselves like that in front of the doctor, our disease may not be cured. And we have complete trust in the doctor. Okay, fine. He will cure me. Let him cut. Okay. So similarly, sometimes the Lord also tries to purify his devotees by being strict with them, by neglecting them or by chastising them or doing many things. But devotee should not get offended by the Lord's behavior. Devotee should not feel discouraged or disappointed. But devotees should become grateful to the Lord. The Lord is doing this only to purify me. That's what Vallabh Bhatta thought at the end of the day. So Vallabh Bhatta, initially when he was perceiving a lot of neglect from the Lord, from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was not very much comfortable. He was thinking that why the Lord is doing this to me? What did I do? So like that he was, there's a lot of change in his behavior and all that he was thinking. But finally, Vallabh Bhatta felt so grateful. Actually, Lord is doing this to me to purify me. Just like Krishna did it to Indra, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing this to me. So like that, a devotee will become ultimately grateful when we come to the right consciousness. Oh, it's way beyond time. I'm sorry, I didn't realize. Thank you. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. And sorry, I thought it's Madhya Leela, Sadhama says. But it's Antilila.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. First of all, I would really, you know, be grateful to you that you were not even prepared, but you delivered such a wonderful class. So really indebted to you, really grateful to you, Prabhu. That shows because you have written Subodhini yourself. So definitely you have, you know, each and every aspect of all the volumes of books. So thank you, Prabhu. And thank you for establishing this point that how devotional service and following the acharyas is very, very important whenever we deliver some message, either by oral, like classes, or in writing, by presenting some books. And how, one more point that struck me, that, you know, how Krishna, you know, he tried to correct Indra. So he didn't dethrone him from that position and he didn't even disown him. But, you know, he really cautioned him that you have to be careful. And last point, that how we also should not, you know, take for granted this merciful nature, this magnanimous nature of the Supreme Lord. Rather, we should execute our responsibilities very nicely. So thank you, Prabhu. Thank you so much. And with interest of time, I know I requested you till 12 o'clock and it's already 12:05. But I'll just say that let's take just one question, if it is okay for you. Just one and the only question. So thank you, Prabhu. Yeah, devotees. So one and only question will be taken by Prabhuji in interest of time because it's already late in India. So go ahead if anybody has any question.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Dandavat Pranams. Such a beautiful class, as always. Prabhuji, I just have this one question. I mean, Vallabhacharya is such a great acharya, and there are so many people, the sampradaya, who follow him. And we also saw in the examples that he exhibits so much of humility and he understands the true nature of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates also. So this thing is a little bit bewildering, that he would want to go, you know, in one sense ahead or away from his predecessors to write a book. I mean, given that he has written so many nice, you know, he has so many nice works which are still being followed by, you know, Pushti Marg devotees. So, yeah, I'm aware that Sumati Morarji did raise a concern that when this was published in BTG, and Srila Prabhupada did write a letter to her. But, you know, reading more and more about Vallabhacharya, I mean, of course, Srila Prabhupada did mention that we have to take it this pastime merely as instructional, because they are great devotees of the Lord and this needs to be discussed only with devotees. So my question is, I mean, what was that he was trying to go against Vallabhacharya that, you know, that stood out as a thorn? Or, I mean, also then he was a great devotee of the Lord too. So, I mean, are there any more details to it, Prabhuji, that we can come to know?
So basically, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dealt with Vallabhatta in this way, that little dealing that must have happened for a few days is mentioned. Just to give all of us an instruction that we should not be proud of our achievements or accomplishments or scholarship or scriptural knowledge. So just to give this instruction to all people, that one incident is mentioned. That does not mean that Vallabhatta as a person is by nature bad or crooked, or he's proud always. So it's like a phase in a devotee's life, right? Many devotees, even exalted devotees also, have certain phases in their lives. So where they must have done little mistakes, like Indra did a mistake, and Brahma was momentarily got distracted, and then he wanted to test Krishna also. So like that, some small mistakes could happen. Even Vyasadeva, he wrote certain literatures highlighting four purusharthas, dharmartha, kama, mokshas, more than Krishna bhakti. He did, definitely. He understands Krishna bhakti is ultimate, but he also has overemphasized on four purusharthas. And Narada Muni came and chastised him. And Shiva was running behind Vak. Brahma was running behind Vak. Shiva was running behind Mohini Murti. So like that, there are so many incidents within our scriptures, within Srimad Bhagavatam, within Chaitanya Charitamrita, where we find so many devotees also getting momentarily distracted and doing some mistakes. Right? Kala Krishna, this example I just spoke. Gopinath Patnaik is there, another example within Chaitanya Charitamrita only. So like that, we see several examples of devotees also doing some small mistakes. So Prabhupada says that when we see an exalted devotee doing a mistake, we need to remember three things. Number one is that see the mistake as a mistake, whoever does it. So just because a very popular person does it or a great person does it, mistake will not become a bona fide activity. Mistake is a mistake. So we should not lose discrimination. So second point is, just because this devotee has done that mistake, we should not disrespect the devotee. We should not discount all the wonderful service that the devotees have done. So don't disrespect. So for example, this when Brahma was running behind Vak, Marichi and other sons of Brahma, they tried to stop Brahma. Brahma, it doesn't befit your situation. Please don't do all this. But Marichi's sons started laughing at Brahma, and they had to take birth as Devaki's sons, killed by Kamsa, and the Hiranyakashipu's descendants also, they were born for some time. So like that, there's a lot of detail. So by criticizing Brahma, by laughing at Brahma, they fell down from their position. But Marichi and other sages, they just humbly, with great respects to Brahma's position, they humbly requested him, please don't do this. But still Brahma is continuing, they offered prayers to the Supreme Lord. So now that can be done, but we should not disrespect the devotee. Third point is, if such an exalted devotee could become distracted, who am I? There's a good possibility that I also could do some mistakes like that. I need to be careful. So consider the personal lesson to be learned. So these are the three ways in which we have to remember. Three things that we need to remember when we happen to hear or read the apparent mistakes of great souls. Mistake has to be seen as a mistake. Don't lose discrimination. But don't disrespect the devotee. See the personal lesson to be learned. So now in Vallabhatta's case, a small phase is described. This whole incident must be a few days thing. But in general, Vallabhatta is an exalted devotee. No doubt about that. So that's why, as you quoted nicely from Prabhupada, we should not be discussing this in public. Like it could hurt the sentiments of other people also. Prabhupada also showed that sensitivity in Sumati Maharaj's interacting with Sumati Maharaj and all that. So we should have that respect. And Prabhupada also, right in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, he writes Vallabhacharya's name also. You can read his commentary also. Bhagavatam, he mentioned that. So it all depends on the bandwidth of the person. First, let's read Prabhupada's commentary. So point is, we need to remember those three things. When we see the mistakes of great souls, we should not become confused or bewildered. It happens. When great souls do some mistakes, through those mistakes also the Lord wants to teach us a lesson. And that mistake done by a great soul is not a permanent black mark on his overall divine or great character, it's just a small phase of the life. So does it make sense, Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji. So like you rightly said, we just have to take it as instructional and, look into ourselves and see what faults we have and take that as an instruction. I just have a follow-up, but I don't know if you have time. Maybe I'll reserve it for
you. Please go ahead. Let's complete the discussion now.
Yes, Prabhu, once this was during another CC class, which I happen to be giving, and one Mataji asked me, we were discussing this pastime, of Sri Ramananda Raya, like how he was teaching drama to young girls, and because he was in his Siddha Deha, he was totally oblivious to what was around him, and because he was above the modes of the nature, so that's what was described. And so one Mataji had this question that these Siddha, Nitya Siddha personalities who come, who are like the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so they're always in their Siddha Deha, or is it like a moment of trance that they go into such a mode, or how does that work? I was not too clear how to answer, Prabhuji. Can you shed some light on that?
Just like even as sadhakas also, we worship the deities. And we bathe them. We massage them. We do abhishek to them. We dress them. We decorate them, ornaments, and we do all that. There is no lust there. So, similarly, for an exalted soul like Ramananda Rai, even when he is personally doing all these bathing and massaging and then dressing and decorating and training, teaching them drama act and all, it's like he dealing with deities only. Just like sadhaka deals with deities, serves the deities, and he's serving live people. So now it is service to Krishna. So now a sadhaka may not be able to even conceive such a high standard. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself said, I will become totally, even if I see the wooden form of the opposite gender, there will be transformations in my body, but Ramananda is such an exalted soul, he can do it. Yes, definitely, Prabhupada writes in the purports that Ramananda can do that. We cannot imitate him. Secondly, Ramananda being, I think Vishakha Sakhi or Lalita, I don't remember. So he is an incarnation of Sakhi. The associate of Radha and Krishna. No, he is in that mood. He is rendering service to other devotees of Krishna, preparing them for a nice drama which is meant to be glorifying Krishna, depicting Krishna's pastimes. So, because he is on that level, so he is in that mood definitely. So that's why he is not distracted at all. Does it make sense? Or does it answer the question? What exactly was the question?
Yes, Prabhu, partially. I just wanted to know that, when Siddha Dehas, they appear, on this planet. So they are in Siddha Dehas all the time, or do they take a material form, or, how does that work? Do we have any?
I don't exactly know how to answer this, but when they come, Siddha Deha means apparently there could be, say, some blood or perspiration which you can see even in Krishna's body. When Krishna was on Kurukshetra war field, so there was perspiration on Krishna's face, and there were some wounds on Krishna's body because of Bhishma's arrows and all that. Now apparently it's all enhancing the rasa. Apparently it seems like blood and all that, but ultimately it's enhancing the rasa. Okay. So now Krishna has tears in his eyes when he is being chased by Mother Yashoda or chastised by Mother Yashoda. So now if you see from another logic, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. How can he cry and all that? And we will miss this sweetness of Damodar Leela. So there is rasa being involved there. So apparently, to enhance the overall experience of the pastime, sometimes their body may perspire, body may have some kind of perspiration or blood or exhaustion or anything. That all is there to enhance the rasa and the sweet loving exchanges only, rather than thinking whether they are in eternal bodies or some external material bodies. You need to think that they are in material bodies apparently to the eyes of these materialistic people, and there is spiritual body within which, by which they experience the rasa. Okay, but apparently they in their spiritual emotions they experience the rasa, but apparently to this external world there are also certain there are some transformations in their body, so that people may not take the whole bhakti cheaply, right? So means, how does it work? The confidentiality of bhakti is protected. And people see that Krishna is also perspiring, Arjuna is also getting exhausted. So that means they are not divine people. Okay, they may think like that. In that sense, the overall personalities are, and the whole bhakti yoga, its confidentiality is retained, and this inner nuances are revealed only to devotees. They can only understand this siddha deha, sadhaka deha, and all that. Siddha deha and external bhautika deha and all that. So, but ultimately, experience of rasa is the main thing. I don't know if that exactly answers your question in the case of Ramananda in specific, but generally, to this external world, they may appear like normal human beings in their pastimes or in their interactions, but that is to enhance rasa, and that is also to kind of protect the confidentiality of their loving exchanges, and reveal them only to certain qualified devotees. To external people, it seems normal. Okay, fine. Krishna is just being chastised by Mother Yashoda, and where is anything spiritual about it? Any mother would chastise the child if the child is mischief. But we understand the rasic perspectives there. So it's all about experiencing the rasa, and whatever is required, they will do the needful. For example, just with this one example, I'll conclude. It's getting late also. Now when there is a devastating rainfall in Vrindavan, then all the Vrajavasis were tormented. Cows were trying to give shelter to their calves underneath their bodies, and also there are buffaloes and bulls, they were being tormented. And Gopas and Gopis are very extremely fearful. Land is filled with water. You can't distinguish between highlands and lowlands. So Vrajavasis are tormented so much. Now, Acharyas raised this question. How can the eternal associates of Krishna, like Vrajavasis, be tormented in this way? By material rainfall created by a demigod Indra. Yes. Ideally, Vrajavasis or eternal associates of Krishna cannot be affected by any demigod. Demigod, however powerful he may be, he cannot inflict any suffering on a Vrajavasi. They have no ability to do it only. But still, Vrajavasis experienced all these difficulties just to enhance the rasa. Now, after graphically describing how much difficulty or how much misery they underwent, the immediate next thing is, this is very sweet, loving exchanges that happened between Krishna, who lifted Govardhan, and all the devotees. Rasaraj is holding Govardhan, Rasaraj is holding Giriraj, and all the devotees of all rasas are experiencing such sweet, loving exchanges with Krishna. Every single Vrajavasi, whether they are right in front of Krishna, behind Krishna, just 10 rows away from Krishna, they are all feeling that Krishna is looking into my eyes and reciprocating with me alone. So now the, unless this kind of background of their misery caused by rain is graphically described, the rasa cannot be experienced. The description of rasa is not enhanced sufficiently like that. So that is only to just give an uddipan. Just like you eat, say, mirchi. Now, once I was eating utappa, in that there is some mirchi, some beans and all that. I thought this mirchi is actually beans and I ate it. I can't handle this spice. Nayanam galadhashru dharaya adhanam gadgadar udhaya agira is happening that time. So at that time, if somebody gives me some sweet, I can relish it better. I will relish rasamalai or rasgulla immediately after eating some mirchi. Okay. But I have already eaten 10 sweets and 11 sweets someone gives. It doesn't have such special effect on me. Fine. Okay, one more sweet or I will take it later. I don't want it. Or I will take it tomorrow. I will say that. So this kind of external difficulty is presented within the pastimes of the Lord so that the next rasic moment is more intensely experienced by the readers and by the devotees, of course, who are participating in the pastime. Does it make sense, Madhuri? I don't know if it was directly is connecting.
Yeah, now I understood. So you're basically saying that they are in their eternal spiritual form, but then they exhibit some kind of material emotions just so to increase the rasa and to appear normal again amongst non-devotees.
Yes. That's the essence.
Thanks so much, Prabhuji, for beautifully explaining. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji. Thank you so much for your wonderful association. So we'll end up here. And thank you for the wonderful answer, how patiently you answered. Thank you so much. So we'll stop here. Vancha kalpate rupyascha kripa sindhubhaiva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Ananta koti vaishnavindiki jai shri chaitanya charitamrita ki jai his grace gaurang darshan prabhu ki jai. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Hare Krishna. 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 Hare Krishna.